Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Nkoga. This evening, we talk about corruption and the coronavirus pandemic. And with us tonight is my colleague, Vincent McCorry, the managing editor of VOA Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, an independent political analyst based in Durban, South Africa. Gentlemen, once again, welcome to the show.
Thank you
very much for inviting us.
You're very much welcome. As I said, tonight we are talking about corruption and the coronavirus. And as the coronavirus takes toll in many parts of the world, it's a double blow for some countries in Africa. For instance, in South Africa, as the number of cases have increased, there are growing concerns over widespread corruption involving funds meant to deal with COVID-19 pandemic. The graft involves, according to some sources, overpricing substandard products and services and giving tenders to those connected to the government and the ruling party. At least 9 civil society groups have written South Africa's authorities demanding action to be taken against state officials, private companies and individuals who are siphoning funds meant to deal with COVID-19 in Gauteng province. In the other African large economy in Nigeria, the situation is no different. In Nigeria, despite the impact of the virus, their economic situation is not improving, and many people blame it on corruption. So, Vincent, maybe with the pandemic, there's no accountability at all.
One, we just have to realize that in a number of these countries, corruption is an ever-present. And every time there is any money, regardless of the purpose of the money, it is an opportunity for someone to steal. It's become part of the life of public officials. That is almost the objective for some, for being in those offices, to enrich themselves as quickly as they can and in a mercenary fashion without caring whatsoever. So when the pandemic hit the continent, and many countries, of course, reached out to foreign donors to give them funds to help fight the pandemic because their systems are fundamentally weak, whatever help was given, and we know, looking back, you can go back to the World Bank. It did actually come in and disperse some monies to some of the countries, World Bank, the IMF, and even help came from China. This became an opportunity once again for some of these public officials to steal. And there have been stories across the continent. In Nigeria, in Kenya, just a recent story that came out based on an investigative report by a major media house exposed that millions of dollars have disappeared. That is money that was given to Kenya by the World Bank, International Monetary Fund, and other foreign agencies. Some of the practical help that was brought in, including donated masks and ventilators, are from someone like Jack Ma, the Chinese billionaire. They went missing as soon as they arrived. And we know that some of those ended up being sold to people when actually they were supposed to have been distributed for free by the government or given to certain government agencies to help fight the pandemic. So that has been the reality. There have been the same claims across the continent. There have been the same claims of stolen funds and other COVID-related assistance in Nigeria and in other countries. So it is a shame, but this has been the case across many of the countries because there's no accountability. Anyway, these officials steal all the time. Anyway, there is not as much accountability in any of these countries, but now it is even worse because nobody really understands how much money has come in and how it's supposed to be used. Most of the citizens are really not aware of how this money was supposed to be. They know that money was supposed to be given to them. In some of the countries, literally, money was given to them to help them because of the economic hardship, or some of it was supposed to be used to help buy the necessary things like ventilators and masks and be distributed free to the citizens. So it's such a shame.
Yeah, Suleiman, your general outlook on the corruption so far.
Douglas, see, as you have said, for Africa it was a double blow. Already we had a corruption pandemic rage all over the continent, and it was almost malignant. And then this one came in. Number one, it was a shock. It was an emergency. It was a deadly emergency because people's lives were going. So as a result of that, you needed emergency PPEs, you needed emergency medical supplies. So, and then there were shortages, which means because of that emergency need, many governments found it necessary to relax the procurement procedures and left it open. So that was a gap to facilitate corruption. Number two, yes, the pandemic constrained the economies immediately, but it also made the budgets big because the budgets had to cater for the urgent and massive demand of all these medical supplies which were required. All this huge money which was put on the market, it was an open facility for our already malignant sickness. Sadly, the system the system had problems of the problems of economic laws of supply and demand. There were shortages all over. So once there were shortages of PE, once there are shortages of medical supplies, then it gave room for our corrupt guys to take opportunity to inflate prices, to do whatever corrupt activities, because now there is demand to give wrong prices, to inflate them, and so on and so forth. So the environment was so open for them to continue with the corrupt practices. That is why, as Vincent has said, it has been an outcry from the Cape to Cairo. Everywhere, the funds have been abused because the system, the environment which was created by the pandemic, allowed it. We in South Africa, we have not been spared. A lot of money was put at play because, of course, South Africa is an organized country. It has got resources. So we, like the developed country, we followed the three-stream policy, where the country had to look at the pandemic, pumped their resources. It had to look at the social intervention. It pumped their resources. It had to put, then they had to look at the third stream of the economic intervention. It also put their resources. There was no way where all those resources were going to escape the hands of the sharks, which were already roaming. And once it was put there, they started feasting on it, as it is now becoming evident in South Africa. So that because we are an organized country, because we are a transparent country, now all the social systems have realized it, the civil society, the political parties, the journalists, the investigative journalists, they have all unearthed all of it. Now it is coming at the fore. Right now, as we speak, the government is highly involved. One of the battles, as it is fighting the pandemic, all systems are set to fight the corruption which has infiltrated or in the fight of the pandemic. You'll find from the president to the cabinet to the provincial leaders, everybody now is involved in the fight against the corruption which has infiltrated the whole system.
I see. Vincent Suleiman there mentions there, and he sort of heaps some praise on South Africa. At least there has been an outcry over there. But in many other countries, civil society, opposition groups, the media can't even raise a finger because of the conditions of the pandemic lockdowns.
Yeah, I mean, look, what a perfect way to control the citizens. Granted, there's a desire to protect them from infections. But of course, when the citizens cannot get out to the streets to express themselves because of the curfews, restrictions on how many people can come together. And obviously, the government officials now can do their own things without having to answer to anybody. You can expect them to have a field day, which is exactly what they like to have. Because remember, in most of these African countries, the only way sometimes public officials are made to change course in certain things is through the streets, is when they see protests, when people make a lot of noise. So there has been an opportunity here to clamp down on the people, because you cannot protest, you cannot gather, you cannot have any major discussions. And so people are scattered, even those in the civil society are all over, because everybody is locked up in their own houses. They may have some semblance of meeting through Zoom and other electronic system, whatever, internet-based methods. But you see, that does not cut it. So the officials, the public officials, are really having a field day in doing what they need, they want to do. And it's not like we relish talking about the negative things that take place on the continent. It's that we wish well for the continent. I personally just always hope we can just be talking about the wonderful successes in fighting corruption, the amazing democratic institutions that are being built by especially those in the establishment. It's a shame that we have to talk about this, because it is what is more common than the other, than the desired kind of atmosphere. So it's sad, but that's the reality. And the citizens, as a person who covers the continent, who talks to citizens in many ways, this is what I hear. This is what they talk back to me. This is what they say. Where's the money we were promised? What's going on with the things you were told you'd be given? Why is politician so-and-so suddenly a billionaire, but as we are still very poor? Mm. What happened to that? So this is what he is saying, is what I'm sounding back to the society, what the citizens are saying, many of them who don't have an opportunity to speak to anybody.
Yeah, indeed, you are right. We are not here to throw the dirt out there. We're just concerned that these are the feelings of the people down there on the continent. That's what some of these ideas come from the people on the continent. They ask us, why is such a thing happening? Well, for those just joining us, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable. We are coming to you from Washington. Our topic tonight is looking at the corruption in the coronavirus pandemic situation. Our panelists are my colleagues, Vincent Makori of VOA's Managing Editor of Africa 54, and Suleiman Mugula, a South African-based independent political analyst. And I'm your host, Douglas Impoga. Suleiman, the sadness, as Vincent mentioned out earlier, we're not here to say that this is the dirt on Africa, but now the irony is that with this pandemic, with low economic activity, with no trade, with no nothing, with countries locked down, the economies are getting shattered, but a few individuals are bent on enriching themselves instead of looking out for their countries.
Yes, Douglas, and again to also add on what you and Vincent are saying, we are not here to release, or we are not enjoying, we are not criticizing for the sake of criticizing. We are talking the reality, as Vincent is saying. We are echoing what the ordinary man on the street in Africa is saying. These governments, many of them, have just got loans from the IMF, loans from the World Bank. The EU is giving them money day and out. But as we speak, 6 months in the pandemic, very few countries have put up hospital, emergency hospitals. Very few countries have put up emergency clinics. Very few people have ordered whatever medical requirements are required. They have not been able, even some of them, are failing to supply PPEs. Many countries, nurses in Zimbabwe, nurses are on strike, doctors are on strike. In Kenya, nurses are on strike. In Uganda, of course, the pandemic is not so strong as yet, but should it come, of course, the people will go on strike, the health workers will go on strike. But even then, before even it comes, they are still being poorly paid. The facilities are still being poor. They are not even being improved. But the money is there. Worse, in some of these countries where the pandemic is strong, like in South Africa, the reality of it is that even health workers are dying. In Ghana, they are talking about 2,000 health workers who have already passed. In South Africa, we are going over 100 health workers who have passed away, and the numbers are increasing. Why? Because some of these things, some of the PPEs which are supplied are substandard. Some of the things which are ordered, some of the structures which are put there, they are inflated prices. Where is the money going? They have locked these governments. They are so happy when they are on the screens of TVs and on radio announcing lockdowns and giving feedbacks. But they have locked up people. Have they given them food? In Uganda, the president was so proud they are going to supply food. They never even went beyond the capital. Can you imagine a full government failing to help people to go beyond the capital? The people are not working. Have they given them, do they have a budget to financially help those whose businesses have collapsed? There is the people who are involved in the tourist industry. In the tourist industry, it collapsed. Has anybody supported them? Has anybody helped the restaurant industries, the food industries? Nobody. Where is the money? Where is the money which they have got, from IMF? All that money is lining the pockets of the politicians. They are building mansions. They are opening up accounts abroad. All the money is going. So it is very shameful. It is very bad. This corruption, which is continuing on the continent, has to stop.
I see.
I just wanted to say, one of the things that really saddens me, disturbs me, is the callousness with which some of these public officials operate. They clearly and openly steal. There's no question about it. When people brag about how savvy they have become, very rich, they are tough businessmen. There are others who even describe themselves as hustlers in Kenya. And these are people who have been in government all the time. And we know that if you were seriously serving the people in the government, you wouldn't be busy building hotels and opening up businesses all over the country, investing. Because if you are seriously serving the public, first, you don't have that kind of finance. Second, you don't have that time to be doing private business, because it means you're stealing from the citizens. You're using the time that you were elected to spend serving the people to advance your personal private interests. And there's no way you can explain to me that using the salary that you are receiving as a government public official, that you can become this amazingly wealthy person within a certain period of time and be so razor sharp focused on getting even wealthier and wealthier. The underlying thing is the callousness in this field, a cold-hearted detachment from the people. They don't feel anything. You look at our people, poor, miserable, dying of even simple diseases, continuing to live in mud houses, children walking to school and sitting under trees. Or I saw this in Malawi, I was there not long ago, kids literally sitting under a tree. And yet, on the other side of town, we have all these people who have a muscle much wealth, as public officials. It is a shame. So all that I think the citizens would want to see is just use the public funds to help the citizens to uplift their lives and provide essential services, health, education, and infrastructure.
And with this corruption and looting, as the economies collapse, don't these leaders fear that maybe this might be a double-edged sword for them? Because people will get a point where they can't take it anymore.
Douglas, these guys, they are rusty, they are senseless, they are shameless. As Vincent has said, they are callous. They are not concerned. I think what is so hurting is that those who are helping them, amongst them, the international community, because really these countries are not going concerns. They are bankrupt. Many of them are struggling to pay the loans which they were given. Many of them are failing even to support their local budgets. So if the countries are not a going concern, if they are bankrupt, if they cannot manage to support their budgets, why should the IMF give them more money? Why should the World Bank give them more money? Why should the EU give them more money without a plan? How are they going to use the money? A country like Uganda has lost about two people, and then IMF is already giving them money. World Bank is already giving them money. EU is already giving them money, even without a plan how they are going to use the money with. Which hospital are they going to build? Where are they going to build it? What are they going to do with the money? The international community itself is complicit. The international community itself is to blame for impoverishing the people of Africa. The more it gives them, these leaders, the money without plan, the more it gives them without accountability, without systems of accountability, without systems of transparency, the more they loot this money, and the people of Africa become poorer and poorer. They become, as Vincent has said, the children go to school barefooted. Some of them cannot even afford two meals a day, but the leaders are bulging day and night. So even the international community also, Douglas, we need to tell it to them straight that they are not helping the situation of corruption on this continent. They are instead fueling the corruption on the continent.
And Douglas, if I may add.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so you see, what's going on, you ask the question, don't they fear that somewhere along the way the citizens will wake up to this? And you know why they don't fear and they don't care? It is because there is precedent here. They have seen that everyone who has come before them has gotten away with it. And for those who have been in the system for many, many years, they know that year after year after year, people have talked about these corruption issues, but they go on. You tell me, please tell me, how many people have ever been held accountable in Kenya, in Uganda? Now, we have some semblance of fighting corruption in Tanzania, but really held accountable for having stolen billions of dollars, been put to jail, imprisoned, and then their property seized, as it happens in countries like this, the property seized so that the money can be recovered. How many? I'm now not a very young man. I've been in Kenya, covered corruption, covered the country for years, and I've seen people come from nothing, get involved in all sorts of scandals, become millionaires, and they are still there. Nobody has ever arrested them. They may have been mentioned. There's always this talk. Oh, so-and-so, we know. The citizens know so-and-so is a thief. The citizens know that man's wealth comes from our money, from money that was given as foreign aid. But they are still there. They live in the poshest areas. They recycle themselves in the political system. Today they're a minister. Tomorrow they're out. Tomorrow they come back as a member of parliament, a minister again, a senator, a governor, and some even go on to become president. So because they have seen that they can always get away with it, they can continue doing it. And you know their safety net, what do? They go and reinvest the money that they stole in the Western countries. When things go bad, where do they go to? They come back. They come to the U.S. They go elsewhere. You can talk about Santosh and others. They go to these Western countries, which have allowed them to take some of the money they stole. There's money given from the West, given to the African countries, stolen right in the African countries, brought back into these Western countries where they buy homes in some of the most expensive real estate that we know in some of these countries. So there is a president. They have a reason to continue because there's nobody that is being held accountable.
Yes, I went.
Recently, in Uganda, it is even more obscene. Because in Uganda, these guys are so rich, the rich guys, the politicians and those rich guys, the rich families, they go and buy a whole village of about 3 poor citizens. They buy them off and they throw them on the street.
Wow.
So it is just so obscene. It has become so obscene. But to answer the question quickly, Douglas, what should the people do? It is already happening, whether they don't care, but the people are going to rise. They rose in Sudan. People pleaded to them. They refused until it was overthrown. They have risen up in Mali. The chaos started from the judiciary, which they have already destroyed, and the people are on their heels. They are saying, we don't want the leadership. It will happen in Uganda. They will reject him, whether Museveni has got hundreds of guns and helicopter gunships. But the people are going to rise up. They will rise up in Rwanda. They will rise up in Chad. They will rise up in Togo and all these countries where the dictators have sat on them.
Vincent, do you share Suleiman's optimism?
I don't know what to call it, but I have to say this. Yes, there is evidence in history that at a certain point in time, people get fed up. They may be oppressed for 100 years, for 150 years, but somewhere along the way, there will be a generation that may be the one that will be held accountable. And as Suleiman has referred to, I mean, countries like Sudan, nobody could have imagined that a popular uprising will take down Omar al-Bashir. So, that's not the best way, but you know what? Some of these leaders are setting up their countries for revolution.
Yeah, so it appears here that may be, as you say, may not be the best way, but, well, when pressure went exerted, find the way of least resistance, so maybe, who knows?
Yes.
Yeah, but otherwise, let's hope Africa goes through some of these things, like the corruption and the pandemic. It's too big of a major blow, double blow to hit the people there. Unfortunately, we have run out of time, and that wraps up this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, my colleague Vincent Makori, Managing Editor, Africa 54. Yes, and Suleiman Mugulan, independent political analyst based in South Africa. Gentlemen, as always, thanks for being on the show.
It is a pleasure.
You're very much welcome. And we'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that you can hear our roundtable on the internet. You just have to access it by going to the Voice of America website at www.voanews.com. Click on Programs and scroll down to Reporters Roundtable. You can also drop us a line. Our email is reporters@voanews.com. Once again, thanks very much for tuning in. And until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Mpoga.
Hi, this is Larry London. You are invited to join me every day for Border Crossings. This is unprecedented times that we're all faced with. Everybody's at home. Everybody's sitting and wondering what the future will hold once this COVID-19 virus is under control on a worldwide level. Well, in the meantime, I'm here to help you forget about the problems going on outside your door. Tune in for an hour of music every day by request on Border Crossings.
Don't miss Issues in the News, where a panel of prominent Washington journalists deliberate the latest top stories of the week, which include a number of speakers at the Republican National Convention praise the accomplishments of President Trump's administration before the coronavirus pandemic. Join Issues in the News moderator Dan Raviv with panelist Emily Tamkin and Josh Glancy this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.